And welcome into the Friday edition, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski in on the program today, and Nick Kieser. PK in for Joe today. How we doing?
What's good going morning. On? Good morning, Nashville. Good morning, fellas. Good to be here.
Good
always
to have
appreciate
you.
It.
Always appreciate you coming in. Kieser, how we doing? What's going on? It's Friday.
Hey, we're great. But how are you? Did you get enough sleep last night?
No.
After a wonderful game.
I did not get enough sleep last night, but
yeah,
the end is near.
There's a nap. There's a nap coming.
There's definitely a nap coming today. The toddler usually will be cooperative and nap, so I'm going to try to take advantage of that.
Reba.
I mean, I nap on a lot of days that I don't get up at this hour to do this show, but on a day that I do get up at this hour to do this show, I certainly find a nap.
So are you locked in even in early April to the Yankees every night? Like, is this an every night thing for you when you can?
Yeah. I mean, it's not like a demand, but it's what's on in our house. And I've watched pretty closely so far, and I'm enjoying what's going on. They did have two dud games in there, but they were back hitting the hell out of the ball last night again.
They've
got a penchant for giving up grand slams. They've given up grand slams the last two nights to make things close. But I'm liking what I'm seeing. It's hard not to like what you're seeing in terms of them pounding the ball. And I like how people are trying to distribute, you know, a lot of teams. Oh, yeah, we had the
torpedo bat.
Yeah. We had the torpedo bat. We just weren't, pounding the ball with it, and we didn't mention it to anyone.
Anybody give the Braves torpedo bat? They need an oar out there.
My oldest brother is an accountant, so he pretty much disappears from like February until tax day.
Yeah.
You can't get a text back from him or anything, and he doesn't watch the Braves the way he will after tax season, but I need to check in on him.
Yeah, a wellness check, as they say. So we're going to get into that a little bit later in the program here today, talk a little baseball with PK. We do have a lot to get into on the show today. PK is with us, so we are going to get into his Titans expertise, take your thoughts on the Titans, your questions for PK throughout the show, 615-737-1025. PK's favorite guest, Stilly, coming up at 7 o'clock here on the program. So we'll get into all things Titans with Stilly as well. Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, will be with us at 8 o'clock. So lots coming on the program here today. So, PK, I'm as we sit here mercifully, I think now 20 days out from the first round of the NFL draft. So we're getting there. I continue to look at potential trade-back opportunities. We talked with you the other day about the Giants and what could be coming there, and if the Titans are prepared to pick at number one overall. My question for you today, we keep getting questions on the text line and elsewhere about New Orleans. Like, could New Orleans be this sneaky team that comes in and at the end of the road here offers the world for the Titans to move back to number nine overall, which would include an incredible haul, as we briefly brought up with you the other day. Would that happen? How open to that would you be if you're the Titans? And are you okay with trading all the way back to nine? That's a popular question we've gotten. Are you okay moving that far back in the NFL draft? So I ask you, PK, as we sit here a few weeks out now from the draft, how open would you be to moving back all the way to nine? How open would you be to moving back potentially out of the top 10 if there's some surprise team that comes up and makes an offer for you? What's your view on moving out past the top three or four of this draft, which I know some Titans fans do not really have the appetite to do?
Yeah, I'm a little wary of it. I mean, there's a good example here. Just a couple of years ago, 2023, the Bears gave up number one in a deal with Carolina. Now, this was ahead of time, so they didn't know where everybody would be drafting, right? They got DJ Moore. They got number nine. They got a second-round pick that was 61. They got a first-round pick the next year and a second-round pick the year after that. So is that a monumental haul? DJ Moore, pretty good player.
Yeah.
So, like, I was looking at I was looking at what this would be comparable to with the Saints. So number nine, if you got their second rounder, it would be 40. So that's significantly better than 61. Their 2024 first. Now, obviously, for the Bears, that turned out to be number one, which is
worked out
terrific.
Very well for them.
It worked out to be Caleb Williams. 2024 first, 2025 second. You know, you're being pretty patient with those two picks. They don't have a DJ. I couldn't find what I thought was a DJ Moore comp. So I would throw in maybe, you know, this year's third. They have 71 or 93. Or maybe you throw in something later and you get somebody like Rashid Shaheed, who, you know, could be your slot receiver, though he's missed games. He doesn't fit the durability thing. Could be your slot receiver and your solution as return man. He's been all pro return man 2 years ago.
Be nice to get a good one of those again at some point.
Yeah. At number nine, you know, who are you getting at number nine? Mykel Williams seems to be sinking on the consensus board. You know, he's got long arms, he's explosive, and he's sudden, but he needs to develop technically. But there was buzz at the combine that they liked him after Abdul Carter, and he obviously is a pass rusher. I don't know if he's, you know, sound of it is he's not, you know, going to be a phenomenal pass rusher on day one. Matthew Golden, the receiver, a little smaller than you'd like at 5'11", 190, but he ran 4.29. I don't know. You know, when a guy runs a 4.29, he usually doesn't come into the league and blow things up.
Right.
And then, you know, Joe was joking Wednesday when I was in about Tyler. He wasn't joking about Tyler Warren, who is a wide tight end who can bang on the line of scrimmage and make a lot of catches for you. And we know, you know, none of us are prioritizing tight end over wide receiver or edge, but that's a guy that can be an offense changer. You know, to me, would you take one of those three guys at nine with that draft haul? I'd consider it.
Yep.
You know, because you're getting a second and conceivably a third in the deal, which opens you back up to still having a crack at a wide receiver and an edge not too long later. You've got then 35, 40, and maybe 71 or 93. I wouldn't eliminate it. I wouldn't trade much further down. I don't think I'd trade beyond nine. I continue to hear 10, 12 first-rounders in this draft, and I need to do some digging on that.
Let me throw this by you because we brought this up a little bit yesterday on the show. You brought up the trade with Chicago and Carolina for Carolina to move up to number one overall back in 2023. And that happened in basically the beginning of March. It was March the 10th, I think, was the date where that happened.
Which is extraordinarily early.
It's very early. Now, the Titans, when they traded number one to the Rams, if
April
memory serves 19th? Me correctly, that was way closer to the draft.
April 19th or April 16th, I want to say.
I'm looking at April 14th. All right. So April 14th, so you're right in there of when that happened. So there's an example of being a little bit later in the process before that decision is made. We got questions yesterday about this. Does the fact that it's April the 4th and there's been no movement on this to this point signal to you that there's a lack of interest in moving for the pick if around the league if you're the Titans? Or is it too early to make that determination yet as we sit here 3 weeks before the draft?
I think it's too early. I don't think the Titans have, like, shut down phone calls, but I think the Titans have kind of, I don't want to say let it be known, but, you know, what they said is they're going to have their contingent in Colorado. Today's the 4th, right? Today for Colorado's pro day. And then on the 9th next week, they will work out Shador. And that, to them, is kind of the end of their process. And if, you know, within a week of the end of their process, they will be where they're going to be. And at that point, you know, they'll be ready to more seriously consider offers if they're going to seriously consider offers. If they've established, as we talked about earlier this week, that Cam's their guy, You know, if Cam's their guy, they're going to take Cam. If Cam's their guy with trepidation, then I think you could pry him from them. I think they've wisely kind of put it out there that, oh, my God, it's going to cost a, you know, infinite price.
Yep.
You know, maybe it costs an infinite price if they feel about Cam Ward the way teams have felt about Trevor Lawrence or Joe Burrow. Otherwise, I think, you know, they'd be open-minded about anything depending on what you come to them with. I think other teams are putting out like, hey, this isn't a regular draft and the price we'd pay to come up is not what it usually would be. And they'll be, you know, from the point the Titans kind of feel like they've closed the book on their board and their decision to you know, 15 minutes before the draft, room for teams to come and talk them out of it.
I've largely been opposed to moving back beyond the top four from the standpoint of I think what this roster needs more than anything is elite players. And I don't know how many elite players are in this draft. Now, you bring up an industry guy, like, could Tyler Warren end up being an elite player? Maybe. Like, he could be an elite player at tight end, so maybe you do feel like you could move back and get that. You know, I'm a little, certainly now more than I was at the beginning of the draft process, a little bit more wary of the Abdul Carter stuff, just based on what we've talked about with you, with him, with obviously the foot stuff, the shoulder stuff, and now not working out at the pro day, plus some off-the-field stuff that we brought up with you a few weeks ago. So there's more complicated of a picture with Abdul Carter now than there was when this whole thing started. But to me, it's like end up with what you think is a franchise quarterback or end up what you believe is going to be an elite player in the National Football League. And that's why I've got a tough time really wrapping my brain around moving back farther than the top four. I'm not totally opposed to it based on what the return would be, but it's hard for me to get there because I know they need a lot of picks. They need elite players more than they need anything else.
I tend to agree with that. And look, they've looked at those four, you know, they don't want to say, hey, like, you know, we've looked at these four more closely than we've looked at everybody else because they're scouting the whole thing clearly and preparing for every situation. But it's hard to imagine they haven't looked at those four with some additional level of microscope, right, through this whole process. Those are the four quote-unquote finalists for number one / the small trade down, which are the two biggest scenarios. And I think the guy that we're shortchanging is Travis Hunter, who's the cleanest, right? But I think most of us default to not wanting him, quote-unquote wanting him, because he's the position that they're the best off at, thinking of him primarily as a corner, which they think of him primarily as. You know, they are not bad at corner, and they're four deep at corner, though, you know, L'Jarius needs not any kind of permanent solution given he's getting older and he's got a balky knee, never mind the quad that, you know, has to come back from. You know, Brownlee and Baker are good players. Brownlee for sure, you know, I think we all feel good about saying is going to be a long-term outside corner in the league.
Yep.
McCreary is an inside guy. Baker was good, but you don't know that Baker is going to stay on that growth path and be more than the extra outside cornerback. You know, he played some games and played well last year. So I think we're being maybe a little too quick to factor out Travis Hunter. And if they take Travis Hunter there at a quote-unquote non-need position, then the pressure really amps up on quarterback where, you know, it could be a blank and edge and receiver.
Yep.
Though, I mean, you're going to get a little bit of receiver out of Travis Hunter.
I would
but
agree.
I don't think if they take Travis Hunter, it's not like you're saying, okay, receiver's taken care of. I don't think that's the case by any means.
I don't think so either. Paul Kuharski is with us for the entire show today. We'll take your thoughts on the Titans. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Really interesting piece at paulkuharski.com yesterday regarding a couple of draft prospects that we've talked a lot about that could potentially be there for the Titans, maybe later than people think. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Paul Koharski with us on the program all day long today, in for Joe Rex Road, who I don't really know where Joe is. He was supposed to go to San Antonio yesterday. I don't know if he ever got there. Final Four coming up this weekend. Said it's going to be in the 90s.
So was he planning on early work today, or was it still transport issue?
Well,
if things went according to plan.
I think there's some early work involved. I don't know that he's going to get there. I know as of the end of the show yesterday, he originally had a 2 o'clock flight that was already delayed to 11 p.m. last night. He very well could be in Nolensville.
Just a right modest now. Delay.
That was before we got off
Joe
the air.
Right now asleep in Nolensville is what I'm hearing.
That is very well the case. That probably could be exactly where he is. So, PK, I came across a very nice piece yesterday at paulkuharski.com.
This is James Foster's work.
That is correct. James Foster, who we've talked about here before on the show, does an outstanding job for you. And bringing up some guys that we've talked about before that I'm going to be really interested to see when pick number 35 rolls around for the Titans. Are any of these guys there? And if so, how does that influence what the Titans do with that pick? So we brought up one of these guys with you the other day, and that's Luther Burden. Now, there's an idea, and Foster mentions this in his piece. Like, you look at some of the mock drafts now, and it's becoming more and more popular to see Luther Burden either very late in the first round or not in the first round at all and available in the second round. Now, I, again, kind of have my doubts that we'll see that by the time it actually comes around, but we'll see. Luther Burden, that's kind of the way things are trending with him on the mock draft front.
It's a football character question, yeah. Apparently, but the guy would be a beautiful pairing football-wise with Calvin Ridley.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you add him to their receiver room and you automatically feel a lot better about things if it's Ridley, Burden, Jefferson / Oliver, you know, still you'd like to see them add a veteran later who gets cheap. Lockett on the high end.
Yep.
Elijah Moore on the low end. But the top end, you know, the guys who are going to be on the field for the first snap, especially in two wide, you know, they look tremendously better if Luther Burden's out there.
Yeah, I mean, I watched him play a lot at Missouri, and I think he's got, number one, that's why it's hard for me to believe he's actually going to get out of the first round, but we'll see. You know, sometimes there's runs on receivers at the end of the first round. Sometimes there's not. Sometimes you wake up on day two, and you're like, wow, I mean, I can't believe so-and-so is available there. I think he would come in and he could be a pretty good fit here pretty early. And you talk about maybe drafting Cam Ward 1 and immediately getting him some help. That would be a very intriguing way to go. The other guy here that Foster brings up is James Pierce out of Tennessee, who was a very good player at Tennessee. Now, the production itself did take a drop-off in his last year at Tennessee. Now, some of that was they had an unbelievably deep rotation on the defensive line. And some of that may have been what I think is starting to become more and more of a concern with him the more that people talk, and that is, like, what sort of an attitude does the guy have? Like, is he a guy that was just a malcontent last year? Is he a guy that's going to put in the work when he gets to the NFL? And because of that, you're seeing more and more that people just don't really know where James Pierce is going to go. There's a lot of talent there on the baseline, but the character concerns could make him available at number 35.
Bob McGinn, who covered the Packers forever and now does some work for Go Long, Tyler Dunn's very, very good site, quoted anonymous scouts, very critical of Pierce's football character, that referred to emotional outbursts and skipped workouts.
It's not what you're looking for.
No. And the emotional outbursts piece takes me to Albert Haynesworth.
Another ball.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't want to endorse that. Having an element of that is not that bad. But you think to Haynesworth was brought into a team with a lot of defensive leadership.
Yep.
You know, Keith Bullock and guys like that that would immediately monitor him and put him in his place. And Haynesworth had issues here. You know, now his final 2 years when he was playing for a contract, he was insanely good.
He was.
But, you know, he needed some parameters and had some severe issues. Now, I don't know how they compare beyond that. They play different positions and all of that. But I think the Titans would be very wary of something like that at this stage for a 3-14 team looking to build a culture and bring in foundational guys. And certainly when you're picking at 1 and 35, 35 needs to be a foundational guy for you. And these indications are that James Pierce wouldn't qualify as a guy like that.
Yeah, it's a shame because, like, the athleticism is pretty outstanding for him at that position. Now, you know, James Foster does a good breakdown of the skill set that Pierce brings to the table here. Like, the ability to have explosion off the ball, you know, he ran a great time at the combine. Like, the athleticism, there's a lot to work with there. I guess it's amazing that all this is happening because you didn't really hear one word about this when he was at Tennessee. So, I guess he was just apparently an absolute pain in the butt to deal with all year long at Tennessee.
And they did a great job.
And they did a really good job of covering that up. So, is it as simple as, like, sometimes guys – have an eye on the NFL, and that's the only thing they care about that last year in college, and they turn into an absolute jerk to be around at that point. Is there some growing that he does from that? I think it's pretty clearly going to cost him in the draft. Like, look, I never bought into the idea, you know, heading into last football season, a lot of people had James Pierce as, like, the number one pick. I never bought into that. Like, I don't think he's number one pick type of guy. But I do think he's pretty high-level first-round guy, and I think this pretty clearly, PK, unless all the information around this just isn't as big of a deal to one team as it is to what it seems like it's going to be for the league, I think it's pretty clearly going to cost him by the time the draft rolls around here.
Yeah, and like we were talking about, like when Haynesworth got drafted, certain teams are more equipped to handle it than others. I don't think the Titans are at all equipped to handle somebody like Pierce right now. And I don't want to turn it into a Jeffrey Simmons bashing session, but he's not the kind of guy that's going to help control somebody like Pierce, I don't think. I think he's somebody that might fuel some of those. You know, if Pierce has a chip on his shoulder, well, Simmons, who's not a bad guy, quote unquote, but he's got a chip on his shoulder too. And if Pierce comes in complaining and bemoaning certain things, Simmons might be a guy that fuels some of that. Yeah, you're right. That to me would not be a great situation by any means. I think the Titans looking for very clean characters with these two picks. I think they feel like their 13 guys that they've added are very clean characters.
Yep.
Though Bergonzi is not, you know, he talked about character coming from Kansas City. Kansas City, you know, Kareem Hunt is not exactly pure of heart.
Rashee Rice.
Rashee Rice. And certainly the biggest example of all is Tyreek Hill.
Yep.
So, but these are more off the field incidents than I don't know about, you know, locker room personality or meeting room personality.
Right. A couple different things there. 615-737-1025. Our phone number. We'll have more reaction to what James Foster put out there yesterday at paulkuharski.com. Plus, a lot of questions to get to for PK on our text line. We will do that coming up next. Stilly will be with us at 7 o'clock. All that coming up. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios. Oh, and the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. We're taking your questions for the Titans for PK on our text line. How about this one? This is an interesting one from Ed that we brought up a little bit briefly on the show yesterday. Do you think, PK, that having so many voices in the front office is a help to Borgonzi, or does it overly complicate the decision-making process? This is from Ed.
Well, I think they obviously think it's a help. Otherwise, they wouldn't have brought him in. I mean, they didn't bring in Reggie McKenzie, who they consider, by the way, a bit of a line expert, or Dave Ziegler, if they didn't think they were going to be helps. So those guys are sounding boards for him when he wants them, but they're not going to overflood him with information when he doesn't want it. Those four, those two plus Brinker and Borgonzi, are kind of a wolf pack, if you will, who've operated together very closely. They've stayed, you know, when they've had these 7 a.m. till 7 p.m. meetings, they've then had dinner, and the four of them have often, you know, then stayed till 11 or 12 at night, going further on the topic of the day or on the quarterbacks. So they set it up this way with purpose, and Borgonzi, you know, certainly. This was not Chad Brinker hiring two additional guys to throw them into the mix to complicate things for a first-time general manager. He was providing aid.
No, it's interesting. I agree with that. Now, we brought up the comments that Russini made the other day about how she had heard from someone in the Titans building that they definitely want to trade back. I do wonder that when you've got that many cooks in the kitchen, so to say, like, how does that influence what the decision-making process looks like? We know ultimately Mike Borgonzi is the general manager and Chad Brinker is going to be heavily involved in decision-making. So ultimately it's going to come down to those two. But I do wonder, having those two guys in the room that do have the skins on the wall that they have, how much influence will they have in terms of the decisions that they're going to make moving forward here?
Yeah, and look, her the person telling her that there's an element who would like to trade down, well, could it be McKenzie or Ziegler? Sure. But there's a whole scouting staff
right in
there, and it certainly
could be.
It's
a great point you brought up the other day.
One of those people, and those scouts are of limited influence. I'm not dismissing them, but an area scout has responsibility for an area. Yeah. Now, if the Southeastern scout is thinking that they should trade away from Cam Ward, that's significant, but still that area scout is just an area scout. You know, if the cross-checking scout for the East is saying it, that's significant, but it's still just the cross-checking scout. And these scouts have not had huge influence over the course of certainly during the course of John Robinson's tenure, and a lot of them are the same guys. Don't know how much clout during Rand Carthon, but I suspect not a ton. And so a scout saying it is not, to me, you know, a great big deal. And again, so you're talking about a scouting department that is 12 to 15 people deep, 12 at least. Having one dissenting voice in there is good.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Not bad. So if you're hearing that and saying, oh my God, they don't all agree, that's great.
Yeah.
This place is seemingly filled with yes men or ignored men for a long time. It's great if somebody in there is saying, no, I don't think we should do that. I think we should trade down. And they're still hashing through this thing as they've said. And I think if they draft Cam Ward at one and there were a couple dissenters in there, That's great.
Yep.
You know, their voices have been heard.
I mean, there was
and considered.
Yeah, I mean, there was dissenters when they drafted Derrick Henry. That worked out pretty well for the Titans. Like, you don't want your organization all the time to just be, well, everybody's in lockstep all the time. Like, that never happens in life. That should not happen in your organization. You bring up the scouting.
Now, so, they may say that.
Right,
you know, Joe's
course.
Big on that. They all lock arms and say, we all wanted to do this. Or,
that's right.
You know, they'll say we came to a consensus, which ultimately means that the guy or guys who wanted to trade down, you know, got outvoted.
You bring up the scouting department. So, obviously, when Borgonzi takes a job in January, that's not the time to, you know, go running through your scouting department and make changes. Once we get through the draft here, do you think that the Titans could be looking at making significant changes to their scouting department, which we really didn't see in the last general manager switch when Rand Carthon came in.
I think there were really only two scouts that have been changed out. If anybody's listening that can inform me if I'm off on that number, but I think there are really only two scouts that have been changed out from the Robinson regime, and I don't think Robinson brought a huge overturn himself. So a lot of these guys have been over there a long time, and I do expect that they will turn things over more in May. Though, you know, there's always the potential. I think a lot of Titan scouts are on year-to-year contracts. And I think a lot of Kansas City scouts probably are not. And so if he's got a guy or two over there that he thinks he can ultimately get, he may be patient in terms of getting them. So, you know, part of the timetable of the turnover could be linked to when the people he most covets come free.
615-737-1025, our phone number. More of your questions to get to for PK coming up next. We'll do that. Jared Stillman will be with us at 7 o'clock. All that ahead. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Later today on 1025, the game. Tune in for Vanderbilt baseball as the Commodores taking on Florida. Pregame at 5:15, first pitch at 5:30. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Paul Kuharski with us here on the program. T-Bone on the text line. PK, are the Titans 100% done with Levis? Is there a scenario where he's gotten better in the offseason and they're just going to take Travis Hunter at number one and roll with him? That's from T-Bone on the text line.
I mean, what was the first part of that?
Are they 100% done with Levis?
No. I mean, now, 100% done with Levis means he's off the team.
He's not on the roster. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a chance he's off the team, but there's certainly a chance he's on the team. I think there's a chance he's on the team as backup, pretty good chance. I think there's a slight chance he's on the team playing in a stall tactic
right.
season.
I got one text that says, I'm a little apprehensive to trade past number two, maybe three, because the Titans have put themselves in a position where they've got to have a quarterback. So I believe you go past two or three and you're missing out on Ward and Sanders. That's where I go back to, like, if you're willing, if you get to the end of your process here and you're willing to really move out of this thing beyond some just unbelievable deal that I don't think is going to happen. Like, I think if there was going to be some crazy deal where it's just, I mean, you'd be ludicrous not to take it, we probably would have seen that or at least heard more on that front to this point. So, to me, like, if the Titans get through the end of their evaluation process here and they're still, like, aggressively looking to get out of this thing, that tells you they don't want to draft Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders, and they're focusing on collecting the picks that Brinker talked about earlier this offseason, and they're worrying about quarterback later. But, like, I don't think it's a great strategy, and I know they've created this for themselves by their lack of activity at the quarterback spot in free agency, where there were admittedly not great options. But I still don't think it's a great strategy of just because there's a glaring hole at quarterback for you on your roster where you're like, well, we got to take one of the quarterbacks because we don't really have one right now. That's how you really get into trouble.
Yeah, you don't want to do that at any position. Well, we've got to have a guy, so we take a guy. But it also, you know, and they've emphasized discipline, discipline, discipline. So, I mean, if you want to write a case for them not taking a quarterback, there are more than breadcrumbs for you to go back through everything that they've said and done to this point,
right,
and weave that together. Now, the other thing is, can they handle the noise? You know, because while I think locally there will be some of us at least that can say the rationale and respect the discipline and say, this means they did not like those guys.
Right.
I know you may not have much faith in Brinker and Borgonzi, but this is a hell of a disciplined move. They don't like him, so they didn't take him. Nationally, and some noise locally. Those Stilley appears to be on that side of this. They're going to get the 3-14 Tennessee Titans are smarter than the NFL and are quarterback desperate and have passed on the two best quarterbacks in the draft.
Yep.
How about that? How about Mike Borgonzi, who's a brand new general manager, thinking he's smarter than everybody in the league?
Right.
That's a lot to withstand. I'm not saying it should be a factor in anything they're doing. I'm saying if they somehow bypass these two guys, which I think is in the realm of possibility, that they will be a massive target.
Well, and beyond that, I totally agree with that. Beyond that, you're also, if you pass on these guys and the quarterback room is what it is right now, you're signing up for a very painful season just based on the way things are going around, in all likelihood. I mean, is there some chance that Levis dramatically improves this offseason and comes back and they win 7 games next year? Maybe. But you're probably, with where the roster is right now, signing up for some pain.
And maybe Brian Callahan's death warrant.
And that as well, for sure. And I think if you go through that pain and you've got Cam Ward playing quarterback, that's a much different thing than going through that pain from a reception standpoint and not having the quarterback. And again, I'm not saying that's how you base your decision.
Yeah, you buy yourself
patience. I'm just saying
that's
what you're buying yourself a little patience if you've got the quarterback in place, as opposed to, well, it's Brandon Allen, Will Levis, and Tim Boyle. We know what that's probably going to look like at quarterback. You're probably going to be drafting high again next year, which may be part of their plan. But in the process of going through it, Titans fans are not going to love that.
Yeah. You know, and then you got the scenario where you draft him and he plays horribly.
Which is also a possibility, by the way.
Or you draft him and you try to slow play him and Levis is in the lineup for a time, or Brandon Allen. You know, and that can only last so long if things are going poorly. And I don't envision things going particularly well with either of the veterans playing.
No. Particularly with the roster the way it is right now. But again, like if you're Borgonzi, I think a lot of this conversation, PK, you know, you brought up a good point on the football show earlier this week with Braden Gall, and I think it's worth bringing up here. I think the closer you get to draft time, the more perspective of the big picture we kind of all lose. Like, we've been talking about the draft so much, and now we're 3 weeks away from it. And I think one thing you brought up really early in the beginning of all this is still a key question as to how they're going to act moving forward here. How well have Chad Brinker, Mike Borgonzi, the front office, the decision makers for the Titans, how well have they sold Amy Adams Strunk on patience and the long-term plan here? Because if they've sold her pretty well on that, then maybe they're way more open to the idea of a lean year next year and slow playing the roster and making sure you're building. You know, I talked about getting elite players earlier. Like, if that's the route you're trying to go, maybe that's best long-term for you. You know, with this owner and the way things have gone the last 4 years, it would be difficult for me to believe that I've sold anybody well or sold her well on anything just based on how reactionary she's been. But if Brinker and Borgonzi believe that they've really laid this thing out and they've sat down with Amy and said, hey, this is going to take some time, but at the end it's going to be worth it, and that's the way they're operating, then maybe this is going to be, I think, a much slower play in the draft than Titans fans may think heading into it.
Here's the thing about that, too. They may have done that. They may have gotten assurances. They may feel great about that. And she may see crappy football this year.
Yep.
Get booed on the sidelines.
Rabel comes
in and
bad
reception if somebody sees her driver, sees her through a window when her driver pulls over to get gas. And all that stuff may not matter.
Totally agree.
You know what I mean? And on the whim, or she may hear from her soon-to-be son-in-law, or, you know, all kinds of things that can happen in a heated moment, at the end of a heated week, at the height of media criticism, at the height of you know, she may catch 5 minutes on Good Morning Football that are particularly critical. All those things come together and overwhelm all of this well-laid plan for patience and all of that and undo it.
Totally agree. And that is not a good spot to be in your organization. Jared Stillman will be with us coming up next. We'll get into all things Titans with him. PK with us all show long. Robbie and Rex Row, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.